This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Our next guest, Joe Greene, was the linchpin of the Steel Curtain defense that helped Pittsburgh win four Super Bowls in the 1970s. Joe was voted to the NFL's 75th anniversary team and has a bust in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's one of nine Steelers from the 70s enshrined in Canton and one of four from the Steel Curtain defense. Joe thinks that's a player or two light of Canton, and he's here with us today to talk about it. Joe Greene, welcome to the show.
My pleasure, Rick. Joe, I always enjoy talking about Hall of Famers, and especially those with the black and gold.
That's why you're here. Joe, what is your definition of a Hall of Fame player?
Well, in my opinion, a Hall of Fame player is one that has played consistently over a period of time, in my view, usually double-digit years, 10 years, but some are exceptions, but played at the top of their game and was an important person on the makeup of that football team, a person that, for the most part, epitomizes sportsmanship, preferably on and off the field, but one that played the game the best way he knew how to play. A Hall of Famer is someone that played to the highest level of their craft over a consistent period of time.
Joe, when they slipped that gold jacket over your arms, what did it mean to you? Because it always seems like such a moving moment for nearly every player.
Oh, it really is. I think that's the first time that you stand out alone when they're putting that jacket on you, and you know that you've joined a fraternity that, as Deacon would say, that you can never be cut from, you can't be traded from. It's a special, special feeling, and you know, when you're up there on that podium and changing your civvy jacket to that Hall of Fame jacket, and you're looking at all the people that come to see this experience, it's a special thing, and it's something that I can ever remember happening to me in my lifetime that felt at that moment so grand. And I can say at that time, that's the time that you do really feel like an individual because, well, you know that it's a team thing, but you do feel like an individual up there.
Joe, were you saying, I hope this fits?
Yes. Particularly for me because when I was measured, I was like 40 pounds heavier. And I made sure that the times that I was going to have to put that jacket on, it was going to be able to fit me. So I went on a crash diet for about three or four months, and it fit well.
Joe, we all know your dynasty, the 70s, was a Steel Curtain dynasty, an assembly of one of the greatest defensive units of all time. Yet there are more Hall of Famers from the Pittsburgh offense of the 70s than from the defense. How did that message get lost on Canton?
Well, we on defense, we don't pass the ball, we don't run the ball, and we don't catch it. So, and you know, Rick, I think that The defensive line got a lot of publicity about the front four, the Steel Curtain. The linebackers played a part in that for sure, but I think it was probably a little overweighted to the front seven group. I don't know if that's right or wrong, But probably so. But, you know, the argument also could say that, well, L.C. Greenwood isn't there, Dwight White isn't there, and neither is Ernie Holmes. But we have two linebackers and probably should have three.
Yeah, that's one of the people we were wondering about, if you could tell our listeners who that third linebacker is that so many of you Steelers believe belongs in the Hall of Fame.
That third linebacker, we're talking about him as being the third guy, but he's really in the first. Andy Russell. Andy Russell was there when we were the Steelers. The team that everybody could beat. And Andy suffered through some terrible years, and he was so delighted. And he said as much when Chuck came, before we ever won any Super Bowls. He was really pleased to see Chuck Knoll there. He saw a difference coming. And the scouting changed a little bit. It changed a great deal. We started to get some better players. And, you know, I joined a group with Andy every year looking at the draft, looking for help. You know, and Andy was a special teammate, experiencing all of the bad things that happened with the Steelers, and he could share with the group the kinds of things that you needed to do to be successful. He was the guy that brought the word to the locker room. He, and I mean by bringing the word, the coaching philosophies, the teaching that Chuck Knoll and his staff placed on us, and he was able to translate and tell us that these are things that's going to come to fruition. You need to listen to this guy, and you know, over my 13 years, I found out that through experience. You know, you can have great coaches, but if you don't have a messenger in that locker room that's carrying his message, then it becomes very difficult. And Andy did that. He did that, and he wasn't. We knew he was a senior player, but I mean, he could pal around with all of us and be one of the regulars. And
Joe, I think one of the problems with his candidacy is he played in only two of your four Super Bowl teams. You know, the four defenders in the Hall of Fame, yourself, Jack Ham, Jack Lambert, Mel Blount, played on all four of those teams. So Andy, as you said, got there before. He was named a captain in 67, served in that capacity for the final 10 years of his career. What kind of guidance and leadership did he provide you, Mel, the two Jacks, and the other young defenders who arrived in the 70s to form the Steel Curtain?
Every day, every practice, the guy that shows up to play, the guy that pays attention in the meetings, the guy that talks in practice. You know, one of the things that Coach Knoll used to tell us all the time is that you have to play your position like you know all of them, and you have to be able to communicate. And that was one thing that Andy did, and it was all new to me to hear the guy talking all the time, telling teammates what to do, where to be, telling them about formations and what plays. And Andy did that, and we saw as a young group how important it was to plug yourself into what everybody's responsibilities was, what we were supposed to do as a team. And that made it so much easier. You know, I always said that we could talk about to any one of the 11 guys that were playing on defense. You give them a hypothetical scenario about what the offense was doing on any given situation, down and distance, time in the ball game, and you ask us individually in separate rooms, we could probably come pretty close to telling you what we would do on defense, what our response would be. And I think that this was all about, this was Chuck. But I think Andy was able to convey that message to all of us on defense. And I remember our first Super Bowl, Andy and Ray Mansfield, the old Ranger, they were doing what do you call it, media day. They made it so much easier for us because they were up there on the podium telling jokes and talking about how it used to be when they were getting beat up, and I had changed. And when the event was over and the reporters started to move around and go elsewhere, Andy and Ray, they was begging them to come back because they were still had more to tell them. And it's that kind of approach that kept us loose enough but serious enough that, you know that it's business. And that was part of Chuck's teaching also, is that don't let the game spoil your fun. Enjoy yourself. The game is supposed to be fun, but it's only fun when you win.
Yeah.
And, Andy showed us, you know, how to win, how to enjoy practice, how to prepare ourselves for the weekend. Very special leader. Call him Captain Andy.
Well, Joe, we got about 30 seconds left, so we're going to ask you a question with a hopefully a quick answer. T.O., of course, is getting a lot of publicity now for not showing up. You talked earlier about how what you feel about the Hall of Fame and what it felt to put on that jacket. If he called you for advice, what would you tell him?
I would say to T.O., the fraternity of players, they all probably were fans of yours. They had nothing to do with whatever you think the Hall of Fame as a whole has against you or anyone. And I think you need to put that in the background or get rid of it, because you're missing one of the most important times of your life. You know, I don't want to compare it with you being married and having a family, but it's a joyous day. And the guys, they won't be able to welcome you there into the fraternity. And most of all, it's for those people that saw you before you became the great NFL star, who shepherded you along the way, your family, your coaches, your friends. They want to share that with you. And it's not all the thing that you understand and that you learn when you walk up there. We all get choked up because we know it wasn't all about us. And he's missing that.
Joe, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, talking about the Hall. Andy Russell, little T.O. at the end there. Appreciate it, Joe.
My pleasure, Rick.
Thanks, Joe. Next up, the 2-minute drill. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.